Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Monday, February 14th, 2022. Coming up this hour,
stocks slide as geopolitical risks over Ukraine ripple through global markets.
We take you to Europe and Asia for the latest market moves.
The Fed takes a measured tone, with one official saying rate hikes should be data dependent.
And the latest reasons why white-collar workers do not want to return to the office full-time.
New York subway ridership is rebounding after a drop from Omicron, plus a vital crossing between the U.S. and Canada has reopened. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stanshaw in sports. Super Bowl 56 in L.A. The Rams with a fourth quarter touchdown drive. They beat the Bengals 23-20.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. And global stocks are tumbling this morning. We're coming up to 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down 47 points, Dow futures down 328, NASDAQ futures down 177. The DAX in Germany is down 3.6%. The 10-year Treasury up 9/32nds, yield 1.90%. The yield on the 2-year, 1.50%. And the euro 1.1310 against the dollar. Nathan.
Well, Karen, these dramatic moves in markets come as tensions build between Russia and Ukraine. Moscow's military buildup near the border means this could be a decisive week in the conflict. Amy Morris has the latest from our Bloomberg 99.1 newsroom in Washington.
Vladimir Putin says the U.S. has failed to meet his demands. The U.S. warns an invasion is imminent. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan told CBS's Face the Nation there's a possibility there will be a major military action very soon.
They could launch a military action essentially at any time. They could do so this coming week. But of course, it still awaits the go order.
Sullivan says Putin could move before the Winter Olympics end February 20th. President Biden spoke with Putin for a little more than an hour on Saturday with no real progress. Russia repeatedly denies any intention of invading Ukraine. In Washington, I'm Amy Morris, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Amy, thank you. Reaction pouring into the potential conflict over Ukraine. Ariel Cohen, a senior fellow at the Atlantic Council, says an invasion looks imminent.
We do not give Putin what he wants. I think he will invade Ukraine. He has an excuse. His demands are impossible to fulfill, such as rolling back NATO to the lines of 1997. And I think he deliberately demanded such harsh demands in order to have a pretext, a casus belli, to invade Ukraine.
Ariel Cohen with the Atlantic Council says Russia has denied plans to attack. The White House is threatening sweeping sanctions in response to any incursion.
Well, Karen, these tensions over Ukraine have stocks selling off this morning. Overnight, stocks in Asia slid for a second session. Let's get the recap from Bloomberg's Juliet Sally in Singapore. Good morning, Juliet.
Good morning, Nathan and Karen. The MSCI Asia Pacific Index fell over 1%. Japanese stocks among the worst performers as they played catch up following a 3-day weekend. The Nikkei 225 was down by 2.3% in Tokyo. China's CSI 300 and the equity market in Hong Kong, which is also facing a COVID outbreak, traded in the red. Energy stocks, though, bucked the trend across the region, climbing as oil added to an 8-week winning run. And the Bank of Japan intervened in the bond market to put a cap on 10-year yields, which had risen to a 6-year high, by offering to buy an unlimited amount of 5 to 10 year. In Singapore, Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Juliet, thank you. Stocks in Europe this morning are under even more pressure. Let's go live to London and get the latest with Bloomberg's Ewan Potts. Good morning, Ewan.
Good morning, Karen and Nathan. Europe's stocks is under, plunging to a 3-week low today, currently trading down 2.8%. Every single sector in the red this morning, with travel and leisure stocks and banks among the worst performers. Companies' exposure to Russia and Eastern Europe under pressure, and Clariant slumping today. That's after the Swiss chemicals maker said it's launching a probe into possible accounting irregularities. It's also delayed publishing its full-year earnings. Clariant shares down 18%. Live in London, I'm Ewan Potts, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Ewan, thanks. We're also seeing geopolitical tensions have an impact on energy markets. At one point this morning, crude rallied more than 1% to hit its highest level in 8 years. Checking prices now, West Texas Intermediate crude is little changed, up a penny at $93.07 a barrel. Brent is little changed as well at $94.40.
Well, Nathan, Ukraine tensions are dealing another blow to markets that are already skittish about inflation and interest rates. Forecasts call for as many as 7 rate hikes from the Fed this year. San Francisco Fed President Mary Daly says the central bank needs to be measured in its approach.
What I would favor is moving in March and then watching, measuring, being very careful about what we see ahead of us, and then taking the next interest rate increase when it seems the best place to do that. And that could be in the next meeting or it could be a meeting away.
And San Francisco Fed President Mary Daly made the comments on Face the Nation from CBS. You can hear the program every Sunday right here on Bloomberg Radio.
In the meantime, look for more inflation data this week, Karen, and that could mean more unsettling numbers for the U.S. economy. Bloomberg's Vinnie Del Giudice reports.
Economists say February's producer price index will remain elevated after January's increase at 9.7%, the second highest since 2010. The supply chain is slowly untangling post-pandemic. Higher labor costs, reflection of worker shortages, are also at play. Data on January import prices are also forecast to remain elevated, keeping pressure on consumer prices. Vinnie Del Giudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Vinnie, thank you. Well, as COVID cases ease across the country, back-to-the-office plans are coming back. As it turns out, a growing number of white-collar workers do not want to return to the office full-time. We get the details live from Bloomberg's Renita Young. Good morning, Renita.
Good morning, Karen. Just 3% of white-collar workers want to return to the office 5 days a week. That's according to a poll by management consultancy Advanced Workplace Associates, which warns employees will quit if companies force them back full-time. 86% of the 10,000 employees polled globally want to work from home at least 2 days a week. People from all age groups at a broad range of industries felt the same way. An Advanced Workplace Associates Managing Director Andrew Mawson says bosses who are not sensitive to their employees' needs will suffer accordingly. Live in New York, I'm Renita Young, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Okay, Renita, thanks. Right now, S&P futures are down 43 points, Dow futures down 306, NASDAQ futures lower by 167 points. Straight ahead, your latest local headlines and a check of sports, including the Super Bowl. This is Bloomberg. Now 5:07 on Wall Street, 18 degrees in Central Park, and we got an accident on the westbound LIE heading toward Clearview. Details coming up in traffic first. Michael Barr is here with what else is going on in New York and around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. Transit officials in New York are hoping a recent uptick in subway ridership is a sign that the city is bouncing back from the Omicron surge. The MTA reported subway ridership topped 3 million in 3 days for the last time last week. And that hadn't happened since the Omicron wave hit New York in mid-December. Weekday ridership regularly topped 5.5 million before COVID-19. A vital commerce crossing between Detroit to Windsor, Ontario has reopened. A truck blockade had closed the Ambassador Bridge for about a week. Windsor police arrested about a dozen people. Windsor Police Chief Pamela Mizuno.
Any unlawful activity in the area will not be tolerated, and officers will take the necessary action to keep the peace and traffic flowing. There will be criminal consequences for those who interfere with or interrupt traffic flow.
Chief Mizuno also says they seized 5 vehicles and towed 7 more. Protesters were demonstrating over vaccine rules. Albuquerque police say they've arrested a man suspected of stabbing 11 people in the city. The apparent random incidents were reported at multiple locations. Police say the suspect rode a bike and was armed with a large knife. Senator Lindsey Graham says that he is moving forward from the January 6th Capitol riot and the 2020 elections. Graham is instead focusing on the 2022 midterms.
I am not contesting the 2020 election. I'd like to reform the system. The problems we found in 2020 need to be addressed, but the 2020 election is over for me.
Graham spoke on ABC's This Week, which can be heard Sundays on Bloomberg. Many on social media say the Super Bowl halftime show was a huge success. The show on NBC had Dr. Dre and Snoop Dogg kicking it off, Mary J. Blige wearing tight, high mirrored boots, and now a surprise performance from 50 Cent and... The super hype crowd cheered on Eminem as he took a knee. Global News, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts from more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Okay, Michael, thanks. 5:09 on Wall Street, time for Bloomberg Sports Update. As for the game, Here's John Stashower.
Yeah, Nathan, it was a game where the Rams had a lot to overcome. An early injury to wideout Odell Beckham, who had scored the game's first touchdown, a dropped hold on an extra point. That would prove to be a factor. And a blown call with the officials not seeing an offensive face mask on a Cincinnati 75-yard touchdown pass that gave them the lead early in the third quarter. But after both teams were not doing much offensively in the fourth, the Rams went on a long drive, 79 yards. This is the 15th play.
Back from under center, steps back, throws the fade, back shoulder. Cooper Kupp got it! Cooper Kupp brings it in! Touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, L.A.!
Rams radio, that was Kupp's second touchdown. The Rams sacked Joe Burrow seven times, nearly an eighth on a fourth and one incompletion that gave the Rams Super Bowl 56, 23-20. Kupp the MVP, just the second championship in franchise history. The other came in 1999 when they played in St. Louis. Tampa Bay last year, L.A. this season, only two teams to win a Super Bowl in their home stadium. Devils lost to Pittsburgh 3-2. St. John's lost to UConn 63-60. The Red Storm just 1-4 while playing at the Garden. 20th win of the season for Iona. At the Olympics, U.S. won gold and silver in the new event of women's singles bobsled, known as Mono Bob. The gold to Callie Humphreys, who used to compete for Canada. The silver to 37-year-old mother, Elena Myers-Taylor. The 15-year-old Russian figure skating phenom, Kamila Valieva, will be allowed to compete despite a recent failed drug test. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan?
Okay, John, thanks. Right now, S&P futures are down 41 points. Dow futures down 286. NASDAQ futures leading declines this morning, down 152 points or 1.1%. Major selling in Europe this morning with the DAX in Germany and the CAC in Paris, both down 3.2%. The 10-year Treasury up 8 30 seconds. The yield 1.90%. Yield on the 2-year 1.51. Geopolitics front and center for markets. We'll get analysis next from Dennis Gartman, former publisher of the Gartman Letter. Bloomberg 11:30 weather, cold today, upper 20s for highs. We'll be in the mid-30s tomorrow and then could hit 50 by Wednesday. Bundle up for now, 18 degrees in Central Park.
Headlines and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Stocks are falling as geopolitical risks over Ukraine ripple through global markets. And we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day. On Bloomberg, S&P futures down 39 points, Dow futures down 277, NASDAQ futures down 153, the DAX in Germany is down 3.1%, 10-year Treasury up 830 seconds, yield 1.9%, the yield on the 2-year 1.51%, NYMEX crude oil is up 0.2% or 22 cents at $93.32 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.9% or $16 at $18.58.10 an ounce. The euro, 1.1307 against the dollar. British pound, 1.3513. The yen is at 115.08. Bitcoin this morning moving lower at $42,160. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. Some airlines have canceled flights to the capital of Ukraine, and troops there have unloaded fresh shipments of weapons from NATO members. The U.S. has been warning of a possible invasion within days by a growing number of Russian forces. Aides to President Volodymyr Zelensky and President Joe Biden say the two leaders spoke for about an hour yesterday. Russian teenager Kamila Valieva has been cleared to compete in the women's figure skating competition at the Beijing Winter Olympics, despite failing a pre-games drug test. Super Bowl 56 is in the books. The Los Angeles Rams beat the Cincinnati Bengals 23-20. In the NBA, the Celtics lost. In the NHL, the Devils lost. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts from more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Okay, Michael, thanks. It's 519 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak, and Dennis Gartman is with us now, chairman of the University of Akron Endowment Investment Committee, former publisher of the Gartman Letter, as we watch this broad equity sell-off on the prospect of a Russian invasion of Ukraine. Dennis, I'm curious what you think the market reaction would be if there actually is an invasion of Ukraine.
probably would bounce for the better. But this is a bear market, Nathan. We have to understand that there's more going on here than just Russia. There's the prospect of the Fed taking away the fuel that has fired this bull market for such a long time. And for 12 weeks, I've been relentlessly saying that this is a bear market and we need to be very careful. He or she who loses the least in a bear market will become the winner. And that's the reality that nobody wants to understand and nobody wants to deal with. But clearly this morning, the concerns are over what Russia intends to do. I have my doubts as to whether Russia intends to invade. It doesn't serve its purposes very well. Sending Russian body bags back home, it will not play well with the Russian population. And I think that by the time this is done, we'll probably see nothing from the Russians at this point. But nonetheless, the markets are antsy, the markets are uncomfortable, and the Russian circumstance is just adding fuel to a fire where the fuel of monetary expansion has been taken away. So this is a bear market. Be very careful out there. We still have a ways to go on the downside. And what bothers me greatly is that on rallies, the volume has been diminishing, and on breaks, the volume increases. That's how bear markets function. This is a bear market. Be careful.
What makes you say that this is something that the market doesn't understand, that we're in a bear market? I mean, there is a lot of pricing in the market for the Fed to start taking away support as soon as the next few weeks.
You would think that people would understand that more, but we have been trained, or the market has trained the public to be a believer that you buy weakness. And it's been a bull market for, a decade or more. And people get trained to believe in the validity and the extency of a bull market. And it takes a while for people to be cured of that habit. So I think that's what's going on. It bothers me greatly that we saw an expansion of options trading, we saw an expansion of SPACs trading, we saw an expansion of NFT trading, an expansion of Bitcoin and cryptocurrency trading. Those were all examples of the public being brought into the market late in the afternoon of a long day at the bull market. And I think that people have to be admonished of the fact that the bull market had probably run its course and that a bear market is upon us. The only good sign is that historically, bear markets tend to go 15 to 17% down if there's not a recession. They tend to go 30 to 35% lower if there is a recession. I have my doubts as to whether there's a recession on the horizon, and we're getting close. So I think we're now down 13% in the NASDAQ from its peak of, 3 or 4 months ago. So maybe we're getting closer to the end of the bear market, but I have my doubts. I think people need to be careful, and rallies are still to be sold into.
What's behind your view that we might not be at risk of a recession? We got a note this morning from Morgan Stanley's Michael Wilson that the possibility of a Russian invasion of Ukraine raises the risk that we could headed toward a recession here.
Oh, there's no question it does raise the risk. The one optimistic circumstance is the fact that corporate and personal balance sheets are as liquid as they've been in decades. People have saved a lot of money. There's a lot of money on the sidelines. And perhaps there is a hope, a wish, a desire that we don't go into a recessionary circumstance. But I really do have my doubts that we will stay out. I'm fearful that the recession will start. I'm fearful that the monetary authorities, having become as expansionary as they have been, will become contractionary over the course of the next year or two. Clearly, they're stopping the quantitative easing. Clearly, we're on the vanguard of monetary tightening. Let us just hope that the Fed does not sell bonds from its balance sheet, that it only lets them mature off. If they start selling bonds because they're so fearful of inflation, then the yield curve goes to an inversion, then you have a recession. But let us hope that we don't have a recession. It's not something I'd like to say. It's tough enough to be bearish of stocks. To be bearish in both recessionary is sinful, for lack of a better term.
We only have about 30 seconds left here, Dennis. Where do you see bond yields going in the medium term?
The 10-year probably will be 3% before the end of this year, maybe early next year. I think we take the 10-year above 10%. But you have to remember, when I first started trading the long bond in the late 1970s and early 1980s, I can remember the long bond, the 30-year, having a 14.25% coupon, and
right,
you couldn't give them away at the time. And
yeah,
I bring a bad history to the bond market, remembering how high yields can actually go.
All right, Dennis, as always, great to get your thoughts. Thanks so much. Dennis Gartman, former publisher of the Gartman Letter and now chairman of the University of Akron Endowment Investment Committee. As we continue to watch the equity sell-off around the world, S&P futures down 36 points now. Dow futures down 251. NASDAQ futures are lower by 138 points. The DAX and the CAC in Europe both down 3%. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Bloomberg 11:30 weather, upper 20s. That's all we'll get to today. By tomorrow, we'll be in the mid-30s and could see 50 degrees by Wednesday. Right now, only 18 in Central Park.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130. To Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 991. To Boston, Bloomberg 1061. To San Francisco, Bloomberg 960. To the country, Sirius XM Channel 119. And around the globe, the Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We're just about 4 hours away from the open of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. Stocks are tumbling as geopolitical risks over Ukraine ripple through global markets. Russia has repeatedly denied intentions to invade Ukraine, but the U.S. is warning a conflict may be imminent. Here's National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan.
Russia wants to continue engaging diplomatically to find a way forward to address their security concerns and our security concerns, we're prepared to do that. If Russia decides instead to take major military action against Ukraine, we're prepared to respond decisively.
National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan made the comments on Face the Nation from CBS, heard Sundays right here on Bloomberg Radio.
And Karen, we're seeing these geopolitical tensions affect the energy markets. Right now, oil is holding relatively steady after rising for 8 straight weeks. Some investors predict $100 a barrel. Right now, NYMEX crude's at $93.17. That's a gain of about 0.1%. Brent is little changed at $94.41.
Well, turning to the economy now, Nathan, San Francisco Fed President Mary Daly is weighing in on policy. She says the Fed needs to be measured and data-dependent. Current forecasts call for as many as 7 interest rate hikes this year.
As COVID cases ease across the country, back-to-the-office plans are coming back. But it turns out a growing number of white-collar workers do not want to return to the office full-time. Let's get the details live from Bloomberg's Renita Young. Good morning, Renita.
Good morning, Nathan. Just 3% of white-collar workers want to return to the office 5 days a week. That's according to a poll by management consultancy Advanced Workplace Associates, which warns employees will quit if companies force them back full-time. 86% of the 10,000 employees polled globally want to work from home at least 2 days a week. People from all age groups and a broad range of industries felt the same way. And Advanced Workplace Associates Managing Director Andrew Mawson says bosses who are not sensitive to their employees' needs will suffer accordingly. Live in New York, I'm Renita Young, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Renita, thank you. And the final thing you need to know this morning, the Rams are Super Bowl champions. LA beat the Bengals 23-20 last night. Details and reaction coming up shortly. In sports, futures are falling this morning. S&P futures down 38 points, Dow futures down 261, NASDAQ futures down 153, 10-year Treasury up 6/32, yield 1.91%, the yield on the 2-year 1.52%. Straight ahead, your latest local headlines, and yes, a check of sports, and this is Bloomberg.
All right, Karen, thanks. 5:33 on Wall Street, 18 degrees in Central Park, still dealing with the accident on westbound LIE at the Clearview Expressway. Details coming up in traffic, but first, Michael Barr is here with what else is going on in New York and around the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Nathan. The busiest U.S.-Canada border crossing has reopened after protests against COVID-19 restrictions closed it for almost a week. The Detroit International Bridge Company said in a statement late last night that the Ambassador Bridge is now fully open. Windsor Police Chief Pamela Mizuno says authorities arrested over 24 people yesterday, seized 5 vehicles, and towed 7 more.
What was achieved today, up to this point, is a huge step in the right direction. Officers today made several arrests and were able to seize vehicles of demonstrators in the area.
Meanwhile, the protest in Ottawa has paralyzed downtown. Across the country and around the globe, renewed debate and protests over mask mandates and COVID restrictions. In the U.S., a growing list of Democratic governors are easing mask requirements, insisting that their decision is based on medical data, not political pressure. Dr. Darian Sutton, an emergency room physician, supports tougher CDC guidance on masks.
although the rates are coming down, and I'm grateful for that, we still have approximately 2,500 deaths per day from this virus, and I think we've sadly normalized that. And unfortunately, when you look at those numbers, we've become used to them. And I think that people have feel some sense of security or safety, but unfortunately, that's just not, we're not quite there yet.
Dr. Sutton spoke to ABC. New York Mayor Eric Adams is backing Letitia James for re-election. James, who as state attorney general has led investigations into former President Donald Trump and former Andrew Cuomo. According to James's campaign, Adams cited her fight on behalf of everyday New Yorkers for his endorsement. Social media has been buzzing about the Super Bowl halftime show. Many say it's the best one they've seen. Rapper Snoop Dogg and Dr. Dre opened it up. Eminem was part of the show along with Mary J. Blige. Global News, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Here I am bopping in my seat again. Thank you, Michael. .535 on Wall Street. Time for a super Bloomberg Sports update. Quite the game for fans, John Stashar. Well, maybe we'll hear about it in the minutes ahead here. We'll check back in with John in the minutes ahead. In the meantime, let's get the Tri-State Business Report at 5:36 on Wall Street. Here's Bloomberg's Ed Corey.
Transit officials in New York are hoping a recent uptick in subway ridership is a sign that the city's bouncing back from the Omicron surge. The Metropolitan Transportation Authority reported subway ridership topped 3 million for 3 days in a row last week. The pandemic has been particularly difficult for Connecticut residents in the state's poorest cities. The current report's 19% of Connecticut adults say they're worse off financially than they were 2 years ago. A recent survey says that number was 31% in Hartford, 29% in Bridgeport, 20% in New Haven, and 28% in Waterbury. A new law says employers in New Jersey will have to give workers written notice before using tracking devices on vehicles they operate. It takes effect in April. The law defines tracking device as something intended to be used for the sole purpose of tracking the movement of a vehicle, person, or device. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey.
Okay, Ed, thanks for coming up to 5:37 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on KTRH in Houston. ConocoPhillips is said to be looking to sell $1 billion in Permian Basin assets.
I'm Joan Doniger telling WBBM listeners in Chicago, Boeing isn't worried about its Dreamliner customers switching to Airbus.
I'm John Tucker for 1010 Winds in New York. I'm reporting New Jersey-based J&J defending its use of bankruptcy law to avoid thousands of lawsuits.
I'm Caroline Hepke on Bloomberg DAB, digital radio in London. We're reporting on the surge in UK and European energy prices as concern grows over the potential for a Russian invasion into Ukraine.
I'm Ed Corey on WWJ in Detroit. I'm reporting a Sopranos-themed Chevy ad last night during the Super Bowl marked the first big marketing push for the Silverado EV.
And those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. But, of course, it wasn't just about the ads. We have a game to recap. Here's John Stashar, the Bloomberg Sports Update.
Yeah, all the mornings, right, Nathan? Have a technical snafu. All right, Super Bowl 56 in L.A., Rams 10-point lead, and they fell behind, trailed the Bengals for most of the second half, but Matthew Stafford led them on a Super Bowl winning drive. 79 yards, 15 plays. They were helped by a couple of Bengals penalties. Stafford's third touchdown pass, the second that went to Cooper Kupp. It came with minute and a half remaining. And Aaron Donald and the L.A. defense stopped Cincinnati on a fourth down. The Rams had a 23-20 victory. Kupp was far and away the NFL's top receiver this season, and he was the Super Bowl MVP. His only mistake was when he overthrew Stafford on a wide-open pass. But Donald, longtime defensive star, a big factor, and Stafford wins the title in his first season in L.A., after many years languishing on bad teams in Detroit.
You know, that last drive was a special drive, one I'll never forget. Just so many great plays by so many great players, and just so happy to get it done. And I'm speechless.
The Bengals had quite a postseason run, but an inability to protect Joe Burrow caught up with them. Burrow sacked 7 times. NBA, 8th straight win for the Celtics. Knicks back home tonight for Oklahoma City. NHL, Pittsburgh scored 3 in the third. Beat the Devils 4-2 at the Garden. UConn beat St. John's 63-60. U.S. won gold and silver in the bobsled. John Stashower. Better late than ever. Bloomberg Sports.
Glad we got you back. Thank you, John. Let's take a look at markets now with risk certainly off, geopolitical risks at the fore for investors this morning on the possibility of a Russian invasion of Ukraine. Right now, S&P futures are down 34 points. Dow futures are lower by 229. NASDAQ futures on the decline by 138 points. That's a drop of about 1%. The DAX in Germany, the CAC in Paris are both down 3%. We're seeing heavy selling in equities in Europe this morning. The 10-year Treasury right now is up 5/32. The yield, 1.91%. 2-year yield right now, 1.52%. Looking at the 30, it's at 2.22%. NYMEX crude moving a touch higher, up 0.25% or 23 cents now at $93.32 a barrel. Brent is up 0.2% at $94.59. COMEX gold up 0.8%, up $15.40 at $18.57.50 an ounce. The euro 1.1312 against the dollar. The yen 115.18. Bitcoin at $42,100. Up next, a Bloomberg Big Take, what COVID has in store for the world as the pandemic enters year 3. This is Bloomberg. Bloomberg 11:30 weather, sunny, breezy, cold today, only maybe 30 degrees. Mid-30s tomorrow, upper 40s, maybe 50 by Wednesday. Right now, 18 degrees in Central Park.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and futures are falling this morning. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day. On Bloomberg, S&P futures down 33 points, Dow futures down 224, NASDAQ futures down 132. This says geopolitical risks over Ukraine ripple through global markets. The DAX in Germany is down 2.9%. 10-year Treasury at 4/32, yield 1.92%. The yield on the 2-year, 1.53%. NYMEX crude oil is up 0.2% or 19 cents at $93.29 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.75% at $14 at $18.56.10 an ounce. The euro, 1.1318 against the dollar. British pound, 1.3526. The yen is at 115.20. And Bitcoin this morning at $42,150. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, thank you very much. Tensions over Russia's military buildup near Ukraine are entering a potentially decisive week, with the U.S. warning an invasion may be imminent. Russian President Vladimir Putin is accusing America of failing to meet his demands. Meanwhile, President Joe Biden spoke with Ukraine's president yesterday. Russian teenager Kamila Valieva has been cleared to compete in the women's figure skating competition at the Beijing Winter Olympics despite failing a pre-games drug test. Super Bowl 56 is in the books. The Los Angeles Rams beat the Cincinnati Bengals 23-20. In the NBA, the Celtics lost. In the NHL, the Devils lost. Global news, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg.
This is The Big Take, the best of Bloomberg's in-depth original reporting from around the globe.
We're running on a financial system that's running on old technology.
We're seeing house prices reach fresh record highs.
What unfolds in midterms, we will no doubt see again in the next presidential election.
The Big Take on Bloomberg Radio.
It's 5:49 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak, and our big take this morning is on the pandemic and what COVID-19 has in store for the world as the virus now heads into its third year spreading across the globe. Bloomberg medical science and tech reporter Michelle Cortez wrote the latest big take. She joins us now for more. Michelle, it's good to have you with us. Certainly a lot of people, including policymakers, as we've been seeing, we're hoping that the Omicron variant would be the last gasp of this pandemic. It's coming at a very interesting time when we're seeing a lot of countries start to dial back restrictions, even though we've seen this dramatic surge in COVID cases.
Absolutely. The virus is going to act the way a virus does. And at this point, I don't think anybody who actually understands the way the science works here expects this to just basically dry up and disappear. So what's going to happen is the virus will search for ways to mutate around the existing immunity that's in the population, either from pre-existing vaccination or natural infection. And the big question is going to be, what is this next variant going to look like? Certainly, as you point out, there are a lot of places that are done with wearing masks. People don't want to take tests anymore before they get on an airplane. You don't have to prove you're vaccinated. But then there are other places in the world where we're starting to see additional cases creep up. Deaths and severe disease are a real thing in many places, and we're just really not done with this virus yet, even though we all want to be.
What do scientists think that next variant could look like? There seems to be a lot of broad range as to whether it could be less infectious, less severe, or could go the other way. Is there a consensus at this point?
There really just isn't a consensus at this point. And the concern was that we were going to see a spin-off of Delta when Omicron emerged. And it turns out that Omicron is a milder variant, and it was actually breeding already just as we were starting to get hit with Delta. So while Omicron was out there in the wild, really making everyone sick in very, very high numbers, we could have already been developing the next variant that's going to hit. And the concern is, of course, that it would build on Delta. There is some, folk wisdom that usually that viruses will become less deadly as they progress, because obviously the virus doesn't want to kill off all its hosts, because then it would kill off itself. Many of the experts that I spoke with said that's in fact not necessarily how it always works. So as we've seen throughout this particular pandemic, we have gotten more infectious variants, we've gotten less infectious variants, we've gotten more virulent variants and less. So it is just uncertain as to what's going to come next.
What do we know about long COVID at this point? It seems like we've really just sort of scratched the surface as to what the impact of persistent symptoms after you lose the initial virus could be, and what the impact of long COVID could be on the economy.
This is absolutely the thing that's keeping many of the experts awake at night. They know that there is a not insubstantial percentage of the population, people who didn't even get severely ill, weren't hospitalized, not on a ventilator, who will be grappling with this for days and weeks and months to come. We also know that those risks can be silent. So it's not for, a year until you find out that, in fact, you've suffered some kind of cardiac damage or other organ damage that could be with you for an extended period of time. It's interesting because we are learning that these viruses can have lasting immunity, chronic fatigue syndrome and other things that were generally looked down upon. People didn't really believe it. Now we know that there really is an element of this, as if we needed more confirmation. Hmm. And to your point, this is something that economies and governments and doctors are going to have to be dealing with, all these people who are going to be sick for an extended period of time. We don't know the number. We have, as you said, only scratched the surface at this point. But for the people who are infected by or affected by this, it is a real and lasting problem.
Well, there's much more on this, obviously, on the Big Take story on the terminal and at Bloomberg.com/Big Take. Bloomberg's Michelle Cortez, thanks for being with us this morning. Really appreciate it. Karen.
Nathan, it is 5:54 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Law Report. Let's get to the legal stories we're watching this morning from Bloomberg's Jeff Bellinger.
A federal class lawsuit filed in San Francisco charges that a change to Southwest Airlines' attendance discipline policy for flight attendants penalizes workers who use family or medical leave. A proposed settlement between Activision Blizzard and the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission over sexual harassment claims is being challenged by a union representing company employees. A Swedish company is suing Amazon.com and Walmart for patent infringement over their sales of electrical cords that emit light to indicate power consumption.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need, all on one legal research platform, including guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
Thanks, Jeff. Now another legal story we're watching. A jury will be seated today in the hate crimes trial of three men for the murder of Ahmaud Arbery. A state jury has already convicted the three white men of murder, but now a federal jury will decide if they murdered Arbery because he was black. For more on the case, Bloomberg's June Grasso speaks to Janine Bell, a law professor at Indiana University.
Let's start with the big question. What is the point of a hate crimes trial when these men are going to spend the rest of their lives in prison?
The point of a hate crime trial in such circumstances is to show anyone else who might commit such acts of violence or similar acts of violence in the future that the United States government is going to punish you. It's a deterrence effect. And given the number of hate crimes, the significant increase in the number of hate crimes reported to the FBI by police departments across the country, there's a real need for deterrence in this area. There's also an acknowledgement to the family that this behavior was race-based, and you didn't have that with the ordinary criminal charges.
There was a deal in place, and it would have avoided the trial, of course, required the McMichaels to admit to racist motives and forfeit their right to appeal their federal sentence. It seemed like a good deal for the system. Why did the judge reject their plea agreement with the prosecutors?
News reports suggest that the judge rejected the plea deal because the family had a problem with these perpetrators going to federal prison as opposed to state prison. And that recognizes the pain of the family and the fact that this was a racially violent crime, and that the perpetrator should do hard time in state prison.
In the state's case against the men, the key piece of evidence was a video showing them chasing Arbery through their neighborhood. Will that be a key piece of evidence, do you think, in the federal trial as well?
It will, if the government's theory is predicated on the ways in which this sort of violence has worked in the past. In the past, racist crimes have occurred in white neighborhoods because individuals who lived in those neighborhoods rejected the idea that African Americans should purchase houses or spend any time in the neighborhoods. So if that's part of the government theory of the case, that this is a time-worn reaction to African Americans in white neighborhoods, then the video will be quite important to that.
And that's Indiana University law professor Janine Bell speaking with Bloomberg's June Grasso. Catch more of that interview plus analysis of the latest legal news by listening to the Bloomberg Law Show. This is Bloomberg.